This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 81, recorded on July 19th, 2012. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live and commercial-free from the AverageGuy.tv studios in a sweltering, and I'm sick of the hot weather, Bellevue, Nebraska. And we post the show each week with world-class show notes when Andrew does them out at the AverageGuy.tv. You can contact the show or you can contact me. Just send us an email, podcast@theAverageGuy.tv, or track us down on Twitter. You can follow me just at Jay Collison, and the show schedule you can follow at The Average Guy TV, all one word. We also have all the links to automatically download or stream the audio or video of the podcast to iTunes, YouTube, Zoom, Stitcher, and many of the other podcatchers available right on the front page on the newly redesigned two-week-old front page of TheAverageGuy.tv. Christian, it's holding up real well. Still looks really nice. So thanks for the work that you did on the front page. And now you can watch the YouTube videos by subscribing out at YouTube to our channel. It's just The Average Guy TV at YouTube. Of course, you can always find us YouTube, iTunes, Google Plus, or even Facebook by searching The Average Guy Podcast. And please leave some comments, likes, votes, plus ones, or any other helpful tidbits while you're out there. I'll just mention I did get a note on Facebook this week from a kind person who said they like the show, and then asked if I would put the show notes in the YouTube comments or the YouTube description, because they didn't like switching back between our site and YouTube, and so I agreed to that. Since it's just a cut-and-paste operation, Andrew, I will take your notes. We'll cut-and-paste the links into YouTube, at least in the description on YouTube, and they can get access to the things that we talk about right there. So that will be available. Your comments matter to us. And you can just send those to me, podcast@theAverageGuy.tv, or leave a comment somewhere. The Facebook group is going gangbusters. This last week is a little quiet, but we're getting a lot of traffic on that. So if you want to join the Average Guy conversation, just head out to Facebook/TheAverageGuyTV. I think that's something like that. Or just search for The Average Guy Podcast, and you will find us. Join the group and join in the conversation. One of the conversations that was going on this week, of course, is that Windows or Microsoft announced that Windows 8 would be released on October 26th. That's kind of old news by now, but you would have gotten that information very quickly because I posted that as soon as I saw it come out, and you can get that on our Facebook page. All right, let's get right to it. We'll run down the cast of characters. We got a full house tonight and lots of good stuff to talk about. All the way to my left, and of course from Melbourne, Australia, and the guy who has Hawaii 5-0 play at least once during the podcast, Andrew Morris. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well.
Good. It's good to have you back. We missed you last week.
Oh, I know. It's been some interesting weeks. We've been busy as.
And how are things at that fine company of HP?
Yeah, good, good. Seeing some interesting whispers about some new hardware coming through, which is mostly in the public domain already. So there's some really cool enterprise class stuff that got announced a couple of weeks ago. That's sort of the first of the enterprise class Ultrabooks. That's going to be real interesting to see.
No, that's pretty good. Going from never selling a PC again to a pretty nice Ultrabook, and actually, I'm watching the Ultrabook prices drop. I mean, they're $600-$800 now for like a core.
Yeah, I'm hanging out for the AMD SleekBook, which is going to be. I think that's going to be the force to be reckoned with. The price should be a little bit better, and I think the horsepower out of the AMD process is going to give Intel a good run for their money.
Nice. We'll have to keep us abreast of that as that progresses. It's going to be very, very interesting as Microsoft Surface comes and what that's going to do to the Ultrabook market. So we'll have lots to talk about as well. And then, of course, next to Andrew, a guy who missed his go-around last time, I think, on the podcast, and it's always good to have him back on the show, and that's Bill Pullman. Bill, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Good to have you. Of course, you got some PCs that you're working on in the background there, and sweltering hot in your neck of the woods as well, and you've got to work outside all day. So how are you feeling about that?
Nothing like water.
Yes, stay hydrated, right?
That's it.
Stay hydrated, my
friend. Start the night before.
That's right. Well, so it's good to have you. I'm glad you can make it out tonight. And direct from his internship at NASA and a guy who's teaching IBM and HP more about their systems than maybe they know, Christian Johnson. Christian, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing. Pretty crazy week at work. Doing the with NASA and IBM for what seems like without end, but it's pretty awesome.
Pretty cool.
for getting it done. So
I think they got more than they bargained for when they hired you for the summer.
There's some stories to go with that phrase, but yeah. I'll leave it at that.
Well, you know what you'll have to do is at the end of the summer, we'll have to summarize some of the best that you can talk about. And then we can do those on a show after maybe your internship's over. So good to have you. Coming back and fresh from a post on the Nest. Is it Nest, Gordon? Is that how you pronounce it? Nest Thermostat?
Nest Thermostat, yep.
Gordon Schmidt. Gordon, of course, posts from time to time at theaverageguy.tv and a regular contributor out at homeservershow.com as well, and an add-in developer of some. Have you thought about developing for the 2012 Essentials?
No, I started, I wrote a post on my personal blog about quitting with the Windows Home Server add-in and moving over to doing something like porting the Home Server Show website into a Metro application, much like Tom's Hardware did.
Okay.
So I've gotten as far as labeling the different Metro grids and stuff, and I've got a splash screen up, but haven't gotten much further than that.
Okay. All right. And your blog post, myknee-jerkreaction.com. Yeah, good.
Finally.
You bought that. Nice. That actually came out of a show. I think I bullied you into buying
it. You did.
That. I did. Sorry. Sorry about pressuring into it. But it is a lot easier to remember. You can check out Gordon's blog, myknee-jerkreaction.com. I love the name of that, by the way. That's very, very cool, and folks can kind of get the insight on what's going on inside of your head. Well, let's get started with that. You, a couple weeks ago, or maybe 2 weeks ago, yeah, two or so, you said, hey, I got this Nest post ready, and read through it, some really interesting stuff. This is not your typical computer post, and that's why I loved it, because I really... Mm-hmm. I'm striving for the average guy site to be more than just about computers. We talk a lot about computers, and that's what we do, but I appreciate you taking the time to write that up. Let's just go through that real quick. Tell me, how is this different from just your regular thermostat? I mean, I've got one on the wall. It's programmable. Why would I want something like this?
Yeah, so this one does a lot of learning. So it'll learn your schedule based off how you change it and the temperature that's outside at the time that you're changing it.
Do you have to run
what you like?
Do you have to run a probe outside so it knows where to get the temperature?
No, so it connects to your internal local Wi-Fi router, and it reads outside temperature and moves it back to the device. And then based off that, it uses a technology that's called AirWave and the leaf to tell you when you're in a green state or when you're in the most energy efficient temperature based off outside temperature and inside, along with the moisture that's inside your house.
Holy moly. All right, so you're saying it goes out to like the weather service and gets the temperature from that to figure out the humidity, the temperature, kind of the weather conditions, those kinds of things.
Yeah, for instance, when you go to the web application or the tablet or smartphone application, it'll show you your home, it'll show you what your thermostat current temperature is set at, and it tells you the outside temp as well. It'll give you humidity readings from inside your house, all that stuff.
And so I assume it's got some sensors on the thermostat itself that pull the humidity and some of those.
It's got a humidity proximity sensors, so it can sense after 2 hours if there's no movement or sound within the house. It'll automatically switch itself to a way where it just doesn't do anything unless it reaches the minimum or maximum temperature that you've set in your house.
And do you set, okay, so I assume after you install it, there's maybe a learning routine that you have to go through, or it's got to go through to figure out what's going on in you. So what's that like?
Yeah, so the Nest has what they call 5 days where they want you to touch the Nest as much as possible. So you either turn it down or up to try to customize it to what you like based off your surroundings. So in those 5 days, it's learning what you're doing and the adjustments you're making and why. And after those 5 days, then it starts giving feedback. It starts giving you energy readouts for the day. So it'll tell you when it's on, when it's off. It has a technology called the AirWave. And AirWave is where it automatically turns off the AC for a few minutes early, so like say half an hour early, but keeps the fan running in your furnace, still utilizing that cold air while your AC is off, and it runs up to 30% less power by doing that.
So it goes through a training cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first 5 days, it wants you to kind of mess around with it. So is my cat going to set this thing off as it's walking around the house, or is it smart enough to know the difference between a human and a pet?
You know, I don't know. There's nothing on the website that says that, and I don't have any animals inside, but I'm guessing that a cat inside the house probably would set it off.
Okay.
Considering if I walk in front of it within 5-6 feet in front of it, automatically the LCD screen turns on.
So my cat kind of sleeps during the day a lot, so I guess I'd be okay.
There,
damn cat. Boy, I wish I had his life. I tell you what, he just lays around, and you know, you go to pet him, and he scratches you, and I shouldn't complain. He's a good cat. So did you start noticing? So you gave it 5 days, then you kind of start backing away from it. It's got a web interface, as well as you said you can control it from your iPad, is that right?
Yeah, so it's got a tablet and a smartphone application for both iOS and Android.
And which one are you? I know you have both devices, so which one did you install both?
All of them.
Okay. All of them.
The Samsung Galaxy S2 and the Samsung Tab.
Any one of those better than the other? Do you prefer it on iOS or Android, or are they pretty much the same?
No, they're all pretty much the same. I mean, the mobile application utilizes the proximity sensor in the device, where you just get a basic readout if you have it in portrait. You flip the device over to landscape, and it gives you more information. So that's when you can see the schedule, the history of when it was cooling, so when your system was on, when it was off. It'll give you a readout within the energy, telling you a manual adjustment you made today made your energy usage less than the average, or the heat outside was hot enough where it caused you to go use more energy than you normally do.
Is it getting any kind of reading from the power company on what the consumption cost is? As you're pulling in electricity?
So it's not yet, but the Nest recently, it looks like on June 25th, they got a deal with a power company or Reliant is the power company down in Texas. And I guess there's some kind of rebate program where people down in Texas, if they are with this power company and get the Nest, they actually get some rebates back. And this way they can feed information back about their customers and stuff back to the power company.
What this run you?
It's $249.
And the average programmable thermostat, probably what, $75 maybe?
Yeah. Yep. And that's okay. Good. I mean, you can set those two away, but it's manual. You can't change that. You can set it during. You can set basic schedules with it and stuff. You can't do the automation. You can't do like the mobile application. Like on my way home from work today, I manually set it away before I left, just to save those 2 hours of it being on. And then on my way home, in order for it to be cooled back down and stuff, I went on my phone on my way home, said, I want it to get down to 74 degrees by the time I get home. And then it tells me how much time it's going to take in order to reach that temperature once I set it.
Nice. Almost wish you could have like a Siri device and say, Siri, I'm leaving the house. Turn the temperature down in 15 minutes.
Yeah. Or Google Now even.
Right, yeah. Yeah, which I haven't seen yet, and I'll talk about my frustration with Google here in a few minutes. But and it's really not their fault. But so $200 and how much? What did you say you pay for it?
$249.
And you think how quickly do you think you'll pay that back? I mean,
So the website says within the first year, based off studies that they've done, but. I was going to try to compare last year's bills with this year's bills and stuff, but I'm from Minnesota, and we've had crazy heat for all summer now, so I don't think it would be comparable at all.
It got hot like 10 years ago, and I don't think it's ever going to stop.
Like you said last time, I'm ready for winter as well.
Yeah, I'm ready to go visit Andrew in Melbourne and maybe get some skiing. And Andrew, you got snow on the mountains yet? Can we come out there and get some skiing?
I think our local, or the mountain we would consider local, has got 14 lifts open now. I think they've only got 14, so.
Nice.
Yeah,
well,
it's all happening.
They have a webcam. Send me the link to the webcam. At least I could look at the conditions there. Bill, I know
www.mountbuller.com.au.
Mount what?
Buller. BULLER.com.au.
All right, we'll put that in the show notes.
One of the things that I had mentioned in my post was John Hughes, and he has called Code Elv. I'm searching for the name right now. Code Core Technologies, but I see this as like the. So this was something that originally the founder of the Nest company looked at products within the home and said, this product, the thermostat, hasn't been upgraded. Nobody's done anything with this in a long time. So I'll do something with it, create the Nest, and sell it. And I see something like the Nest being something where, like John Hughes with Code Core Technologies, could automate and pull that right into his automation system as
yeah.
Or end control, stuff like that.
Yeah. Gordon, where does it keep the data? So where's the database for it? Certainly it can't keep all the data in the unit. Is it sending it somewhere?
Yeah, I haven't tested that yet, but it says the Wi-Fi is optional, but you get more out of the system by having it connected to Wi-Fi. So based off that statement, it has to have some data down on actually in the device itself
in
order to function and be able
right.
to back schedule and stuff. But
yeah,
I'm sure it's making calls back to the mothership, back to the cloud,
yeah.
and
yeah.
storing data there.
Well, it'd be interesting if it set up a local database that stored it, locally. Andrew, with your solar panels, where's that data being stored that comes off those solar panels?
The data in the house goes into a SQLite database on a Windows XP machine.
There at your house, though, that you administrate.
Yeah, it's just a laptop, but it's running a third-party piece of software that a guy's developed, and it's in, I think it's in the Google Code, one of the Google Code projects.
But if it crashed, you'd lose that data, right?
I'd lose the historical, but the data, once it hits that laptop, gets manipulated and then sent out to a web service.
Okay.
So pretty much once it leaves the laptop, or once I get to the end of the day, it's pretty much useless to me, what I've got locally.
So it's not necessarily storing it long-term locally?
The longest that I really need to retain that data is probably about a day.
Okay.
But of course I've got a backup that's taken by home server once a day, so in the event that it did die, I think it's maybe 3 or 4 meg of text files that I'd just have to re-roll if I had to, for some reason, push it back up to the website.
So Gordon, with that in mind, what Andrew just mentioned, is it got some? Do you think that data's got a web service where it's going and being stored, so you can get the historical information, or do you think it's just gone once it's?
So what I've noticed is that my schedule is a rolling 10 days, and after 10 days it falls off.
Okay.
So I'm guessing it gets stored out in the Nest servers back at the
somewhere, because you can go back. You can go back farther than 10 days at the website.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's very cool. Bill, I know you had some questions you wanted to ask, especially around home automation.
Yeah, I mean, for that price of $240, and I was really hot on it when it was announced in the CES. In my house, I have the automation software. My lights turn on and off. Blah blah. My next step was actually to do the thermostats, but they're they're $275, $250 a pop right now. So, which would be still a structured type of scheduling. This time do this, this time do that.
Yeah.
I don't have the option of, it's not aware of what's going on. There's no way to set that. But for that price, I think that's really a great way to go. But like in my house, I have 200-pound dogs, and I have a wife that's at the house twice a week. So I'm wondering what that scheduling would screw everything up with the Nest trying to learn it, especially being into a room that's away from the main floor on the first floor. What's to say? The first floor is, it's in the dining room, my thermostat. It doesn't see traffic a lot.
Yeah.
So I wonder what that would do.
It'll go off sound too. So if it, for instance, my wife switched from being full-time work to working part-time, and the days that she's home, it won't switch to away, even if she's not, even doesn't even go into the room for over 2 hours, because it hears noise and lights, and it has a light sensor on it too. So if lights are going on and off, or if anything changes, really, it picks up on it and stays on. As far as if nobody's home, if you manually set it to away, it'll stay to away until you manually set it to from on away. So if you guys are both gone, your dogs are home or something, you could set it to away, and they won't set it back. They won't turn it back on automatically.
No, there's your option, Bill. I mean, yeah. The dogs. What's the away temperature then? That is that something that it figures out, or do you kind of tell it what you want the temperature to be?
Yeah, and that's where you set your mins and maxes when you're going through the initial setup process. After you get it, after you get it all plugged into the wall and stuff, you'll set your min and max temperatures. So, like if the dogs, you didn't want it to get hotter than say 80 degrees, you could set your max at 80 degrees. Once it hits 80 degrees, it'll automatically cool the house and keep it at that temperature and not let it get in high.
I think that's just a better option for me now. You know, I love my automated software. But the thermostat, once you do the thermostat, you still need an infrared plug-in to send the information to the thermostat. Because the thermostat's not connected directly to the power, your power grid in the house, which it receives all the MAC data and everything from.
Yeah, this is using your low voltage, the actual wires that are coming into the.
Was there any new wiring that you had to run?
No, so the Nest has a compatibility website you can go out to, and I have that right in my post, and you pop the front cover off your thermostat, and you can see which wires you have, so whether or not it's AC, RH, G, Y, any of those. Note the ones you have, go back to the site, check off the box next to the ones you have, click Next, and it'll tell you whether or not your current wiring is compatible with the Nest.
Okay.
Good and you question. Want to do that because the return policy, I guess, isn't very good with the Nest.
Go ahead, Bill.
Quick question is, you know, that the Nest is an old school grandma round style. Most of our houses have the rectangle style, which is, you know, 4.5 by 3 or 6 by 3, right. Whatever it might be. Does it have a plate to cover up the areas you didn't paint when you were painting around the old one?
Yeah, so if you're lucky enough and the installer didn't make a massive hole for the, say, 4-wire, tiny little wires that are coming through your house, you don't need a plate at all because the thermostat will cover it up. But there is a plate. The smaller plate is the one I put on because I wasn't fortunate enough. The plate just barely covers the hole that the guy made to pull the 4 tiny wires through. And then there's another cover that's even bigger than that to cover if somebody, you know, messed it up.
Made a huge, gigantic hole. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Furnace compatibility. I assume it doesn't matter what kind of furnace I have. It's gonna be okay.
Yep, doesn't matter at all. One of the things I looked into, just because it is changing a little bit how you're working and stuff, and how a traditional thermostat would work. So the maybe on and offs a little bit more than normal, possibly things like that. So I did research a little bit into that to see on the switch on the furnace. What that kind of does to it, and if there's been any reports of people saying that their switch went bad faster or they didn't like it, and I didn't find anything about that.
Most modern furnaces, you know, from we've had a couple installed, and I just had one new one installed in the last this winter. Most modern furnace units are really designed to run more frequently and with less power. So it's keep the air moving in the house, and you know, not these big blasts of heat. Or big blasts of cold, but let's regulate the temperature more consistently, and they get better efficiency out of that. So they're used to coming on and off a little more frequently. So I wouldn't imagine that would be a problem. So, Bill, you would leave, ideally, right? You would leave on the days when no one was going to be home. When you got to work, you could just pull out your phone, set the manual to off, and then right before you come home or your wife comes home, you can turn it back on, and it's not as nice as it doing automatically, but it would give you the control feature
ability. Yeah, and you do have the apps on your iPhone, and you can say, you know, like Gordon was saying, you know how long it's going to take to get to that temperature. You know, so if I go and try to do it at 4 o'clock for my wife to get home at 6 from work, you know, I know if she's going to walk into, you know, the bath or not. Yeah. And the other good thing is, like my brand new furnaces are two-stage squirrel cages. So it goes on and then it stays on, even though when the AC is not running or the heat's not running, it will keep circulating that air, just like Gordon was saying. And now with the NEAT, does that same thing too. So it might extend that, might even help a little more efficiency out of I think it's an 89, I'm not certain on that, 88, 87, 89, in that ballpark, because we just had them done 2 years ago.
So Kevin Schoonover, who had on a podcast for the Windows Phone and who's kind of become a part of the community, he, Gordon, you actually pushed him over the edge and he went out and bought one of these based on your post. He had been holding nice. Off, and after he'd sent me a note earlier in the week and said he went out and got it. So he said, here in chat, he said he installed it last night, so it's in learning mode at this point. So he's got four or five days of learning mode. When school starts the 1st of September, his patterns will change, and it will learn our new patterns. That's a question. So when school starts the 1st of September and our patterns change, will it learn our new patterns, or does he need to relearn it, I guess, from what you know?
Yeah. So the software is on version 2 currently right now, and they push new updates to it wirelessly without alerting you. They just push it down and stuff. No big deal. But what I've noticed is that when, like, my wife went from full-time working to part-time working, that initially in the first couple of days, if I had it set to go from, say, 72 to 80 when nobody's home, it would keep doing that, but then she would go over to it when it got hot and turn it back down to whatever temperature she thought, so bring it back down to, say, 74. Then after 2 days of doing that, all of a sudden all the 80s were gone, and it started doing 72. So it relearns. It does take a day or two to learn it, but it does relearn and rewrite itself.
Okay. Very interesting. I think that's pretty amazing. That is definitely a geek. It's a geek thermostat for sure. Gordon, if you get a chance or you're communicating with them at all, love to have maybe a rep or a sales guy or a tech guy from the company or maybe even the president on the show, and we can maybe talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, they've got a Twitter account, and when we pushed the post out, we had mentioned at Nest, and I had posted or made a comment to them and referenced them in Twitter, and they commented back, but I haven't seen no comments regarding the post so far.
Yeah. I was kind of hoping they'd pick up on that, to be honest with you, but maybe they're busy creating software.
Yeah. And you can tell that it's an ex-Apple employee that created this and stuff, because I mentioned it in my post, the packaging. The packaging has everything in it that you need. I never had to go get a tool. I never had to go do anything else. Everything was literally, I took the box off. The next piece I needed was there. The next piece. It had a screwdriver with all the tips I needed, all the different screws, all the different plates. Everything was just in the box and ready.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, you know, sub 300 isn't a bad price for that kind of geekness in your house. And I mean, it's cheaper than a super cheap PC, and it does some cool things when it comes to regulating your thermostat or your furnace and your air conditioner. So that's pretty cool. Thanks, Gordon, for putting that post together. That's
No problem.
That's exactly back when we started the AverageGuy.tv. That was kind of what I was hoping for. So I'll tell folks, you know, if you're an aspiring writer or you want to, you've got stuff that's a home automation or home technology, it doesn't necessarily have to be computers. We'd love to hear about it. So send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. Bill, did we get all your questions answered? Anybody else have any questions on that before we move on? Okay, I'll take that as a no. Bill, you had an unfortunate event at your place, and if you live here in the Midwest or actually anywhere in the country except California, lightning strikes are something that happen on a fairly regular basis and something you have to watch out for. You recently had that fun party come to your place. Tell me a little bit about what happened.
It, you know, we do get lightning here on the East Coast. Normally it gets agitated by the push from the ocean. But it's never been like it's been this year. We've been getting hit like it's going out of style.
Yeah.
And it actually didn't, well, what we know, or what we definitely know, it didn't hit the house. Went between the two houses, which are 100 yards away, and it hit, blew two holes in the ground, hit the tree 20 feet away, burned a path in the grass right to it.
Really?
And went another 30 feet to my dogs have an invisible fence that's buried in the ground so you don't cross it. Well, it hit that, and then it went into the garage.
Oh man!
Blew everything off the wall in the garage that it was mounted, that the invisible fence was mounted to, blew that completely off, cindered the wall, blew the transformer out of the outlet. The outlet of the sub panel in the garage, at least it shut off. But one leg of the house actually got hit, and my Sony TV blinks a code of 7. I looked it up, and it was automatic overload shutdown, which was 33,000 volts.
Oh,
which they could not fix. So that one's now getting recycled.
Recycled
by no someone deal. In some third party, a third world country. All my DirecTV DVRs and the one in the garage, I have 5 of them. They're all gone. They had to pull every wire out of the house.
Does that cost you, or do they cover that?
DirecTV actually covered it, and then actually added the stake and some grounding equipment, so at least maybe I might have a chance next time. And they say even if it's even the dish doesn't need to get hit, but if it's close enough to the strike, there's enough energy from the plasma to actually cause the everything to fry up.
Crazy.
So
yeah. So what makes you all right? So you know, lightning strike isn't all that uncommon. I mean, it happens all the time, and people's stuff gets fried. So what are you thinking differently at this point? I mean, why, first of all, that you're lucky your garage didn't burn down.
Yes.
In that yes. process. But what are you thinking from a gadget standpoint, what are you thinking you'll do different from here on out?
Well, I mean, there's two things, and in my area, the majority of the problem is actually brownouts, bad power supply from the company. We get brownouts that really causes more problems most of the time than a little bit of a surge around here. But now that we're getting these strikes and we're getting more surges through the house, I'm actually looking at a home surge protection, something I can put on a panel or maybe outside that's going to take care of the surge. Even though I went to Amazon the day after and bought like 9 APC battery backups for the areas that weren't protected, I still want to have something in the house that's going to attached to the panel or outside at the service that's going to take care of that problem.
Now, one of the things I told you in the pre-show was that, and what I've just put up is the link you put in the show notes about the complete home surge protector, this Eaton product, right, that actually mounts on the inside of the house near the fuse panel and is kind of intercepts the power on the way in, and it looks for irregularities in the voltage, and it automatically shuts everything down when something like that happens. I mentioned to you, and I'll tell the listeners, if you're thinking about this, our local power company provides a whole house surge protector that actually goes on the meter outside the house that for $7 a month, they guarantee a $50,000 replacement on any equipment in the house if it's gets blown up due to a surge, which I thought was a pretty good deal. I'm sure there's some cheap ways to do it or other ways to do it, but I like the idea. One spot, they came out and drove a 12-foot spike into the ground, ran a big, thick grounding cable out to it, and then it's just a unit that sits in between my meter and the house, and there's two little lights, and once a year I go out and check the lights and make sure they're both on, and if they are, the unit's working like it's supposed to. So that was my kind of solution. You're kind of looking at something like this. Did you get a price on that?
No, I haven't. We just started talking about it. I'm actually, now that we talked pre-show, I'm actually going to go check the company, the electric company, and just see if the utility company has something like you have out there.
Yeah.
But again, it's not something that's so common out here as far as the surges.
Yeah, and you know, I spend $100 a year to kind of cover the house from it. We don't get a lot. We get a decent amount of lightning, but not a ton. But for me, it was still worth the investment. Christian, what do you guys do there in Buffalo? Do you have any kind of whole house surge protector? You got a lot of PC equipment in your house.
Yeah, we had we bought like years ago all these APC 1500. Protectors that had the surge in it, and then if it went down, it cut to the battery and gave you time to shut everything down. But we have so many servers running on one of them right now that our place lost power a couple of days ago, and it couldn't handle it. It just the battery just got sucked right out.
So overwhelmed the battery. And you really got to replace those batteries.
Yeah,
we need big boxes every couple years, and they're not cheap.
Oh, they haven't been updated since I was probably 8 or so.
Nice. Yeah, they don't last forever. That's for sure. Andrew, do you have any? You got any surge protection besides the strips on the floor?
Strips on the floor?
Yeah, you know the surge. Remember,
just the button. We have safety switches on the house, so sort of surge protector type deal. But we don't have any UPS or anything like that.
Okay. Yeah. Now you have. I assume you're using some kind of personal UPS somewhere. To back up something? Nope, just not worried about it. You don't have any power issues, brownouts?
We do, but our power's typically fairly good. So, you know, recently we had an outage because a possum shorted out a substation or something.
Crawling on the line.
Thing like that.
Crawling on the line and it got marked.
Yeah, so, you know, the old, you know, carry the dead bird around in the toolbox just in case something goes wrong and blows out a substation, so you can blame that instead of the power.
Right.
But no, as a general rule, our power's fairly stable these days.
So, Bill, I was curious, do you know where your power source is in the area?
I'm sorry. Where
is
my
it
power?
Like sometimes there's coal or water generators?
You know what? No, I'm in New Jersey. It's pure gas.
Okay.
You know, that's where the main generator is.
You're probably pulling power from the rest of the nation off the grid, right? I mean, I bet you're pulling you're buying Midwestern power that's making its way across the United States for.
I wish you'd bought Canadian power because I heard it's cheap.
You know what? You probably are getting Canadian power, and you're probably getting some power from Buffalo, and some of those
hydro,
some of those areas. Yep. Yeah, some hydropower. Why do you ask that, Gordon?
Well, I was just curious because I know that electricity, the further it goes and stuff, the more regular it is and things, so you can get more brownouts if it's traveling further, or the closer it is to you, usually the better and more consistent power you get.
Yeah, our substation is far away, so that probably leads to most of the problems. But, yeah, you're right.
You have brownouts, you said, Bill?
Yeah.
You struggle with those?
Majority of them are brownouts, not surges.
You held up, you have an APC, you bought is that the $50 or $60 APC that's got the basically designed for a single PC with a monitor or a couple?
Yeah, I'm using this for my TVs. It's a 550 watt. It's five for battery backup.
And it's got some surge protection in it as well, right?
Yes, exactly. So I'd rather have the conditioning and the surge protecting than just the surge, because my Sony TV was on a older surge protector, which obviously stinks on ice.
Well, is it a name brand, like a Triplight or one of those that has some kind of warranty with it?
It's old enough. I think it's older than one of your hosts.
Oh,
here.
No. It's older than Christian, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
It's too bad, because some of those have some pretty good warranties associated with them, and you might have been able to. Although, if you would have had a newer one on there, it may have survived.
Yeah, it definitely would.
So I think the message here for the average guy is, if you want to keep your equipment, you probably want to look at what you got it plugged into. And if it's just plugged into the wall, you probably need some kind of whole house surge protection to cover it. If you're plugging them in devices like battery backup, most of the new modern ones have surge protector that come with it. At a very minimum, go buy a $15 or $20 or $25 power strip that's got surge protection built into it, and that should really protect you. Christian, you got a smirk on your face. What's going on over there? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, good.
Jim, that 12-foot long copper pole sounds like a DIY project.
Yeah, well, you could certainly, but you need the power company to come out and install that
instead of hot wiring it.
I could just see one of those $30 Triplights jammed between your. No, it's you definitely want to have that. So check with your power company. Check your local municipality. They might have some things that will help you from a search standpoint. It does happen, Bill, right? I mean, it's not...
It definitely does.
Yeah. For sure. All right. Anything else on that? Those are actually two really good. We haven't covered that in a while. And then Mike Howard just sent me a note about battery backup. And Christian, you alluded to that. You've got some big UPSs in the house. Was the intent just to back up the whole house or just
no,
the server
just
stuff?
Just all server stuff. Okay. Who cares about the house going down?
Yeah, well, that's just spoken like a true geek. Who cares if we lose the microwave as long as the server still works? That's all that matters. That is a whole house backup isn't, from a battery perspective, isn't something, I don't think that's either practical or has gotten much traction. But I am seeing more and more, generators, automatic generators going in that come on when you lose power, and they automatically cut over at a time. And you actually, some of those have batteries in front of them that are designed to only be able to handle maybe a minute or two worth of a full load, just giving the generator some time to switch over. Here in Nebraska, we, especially in this neighborhood, and I've said this a lot before on the podcast, we have brownout problems because of the power strung. It's above ground, and squirrels get to it. And we blew a transformer like every 3 days for a month one time. So I just found, I've got a big APC, stand-up unit that's got a little readout in front. And that has, I plugged a lot of things into that. And that covers just those brownouts. It doesn't survive very long when the power does go down. But it's, in most cases, at least this is what I found, in most cases when the power goes down, it goes down for less than 3 seconds. It's that quick drop and then come back up. And not a complete, power failure. Christian, do you imagine? Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I didn't notice how many power brownouts I was getting until I loaded up Windows Home Server version 1 and had Grid Junction installed, and it would report all the different APC or UPS results or incidents back to me, and I could see all my brownouts and everything. It was working.
Yeah, for sure. Any good, APC seems to be the company of choice for battery backup. They seem to dominate that market, especially for the individual. Are there any other companies that are doing that you guys know of, or is it just APC? Are they the only ones left?
APC is pretty solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're the people I think that are in Target, Best Buy, all the major retailers, Fry's.
Yeah, they have some off brands, cheaper brands out there, but you can't trust them. APC is exactly the one I use for my main home server too. It's a stand-up unit, like 3 feet tall, and it works great.
How much you pay for that, Bill?
I believe it was $290.
Okay, so that's the good size.
It's a really good size, but I'm at that time where I need to change the battery. So do you buy a new one or do you change the battery?
I don't know, guys. What do you do?
It's pretty easy to change the batteries on them.
But money-wise, the batteries are really expensive. Not the $290 for that big size battery, but sometimes it's better to do that than cheap out and get a cyber power.
Yeah, there is cyber power, and they're on the cheaper end. The guys in chat are saying cyber power, as well as Triplight, which I mentioned earlier. They're also, I think, in that business. Although I know them for their surge protectors as opposed to their UPSs. All right. Well, some good. And Bill, I don't know. The last time I went and bought a UPS, I went into Office Max here in the U.S., and I actually, they weren't running a special, and I used the barcode reader and found out that there was a special going on at Office Max Online. And so I said, hey, you guys match prices? And they're like, well, it's got to be not web prices. And I said, how about your own web store? And they said, yeah, we'll do that. And so I got, $50 off or whatever, $30. So always make sure you're checking, we've talked about this before, make sure you're checking before you buy if you can. Those things are heavy. They're super heavy to ship, so I can't imagine buying those online is the greatest way to do that.
Prime was great.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's why I bought three on Prime.
You had to bring up Prime, didn't you?
Sorry.
I'm going to get killed. Go ahead, Mike Howard. Ask me. No, I haven't. Okay, we've got that out of the way. Yeah, so that Prime would work. Amazon Prime would be really nice to ship that because it's flat fee for shipping, right?
Yeah,
right,
that's great.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay, good stuff. Christian, let's talk a little bit about about what's going on with you. I know there's a few things you can't talk about, and that's okay, but I haven't heard from you all week. What's NASA got you doing? What's keeping you busy?
So I've been having a lot of fantastic opportunities with folks over at NASA and a lot of really exciting events and daily work things going on, but I've had some time to work with the IBM IBM software that we're currently integrating, and basically NASA has had a long time relationship with IBM and a lot of other companies that they do contract work with, and you know, certain companies win certain contracts that, you know, actually NASA's workforce today is about half civil servants and half contractors. So there's a lot of contracts that come in and out, but in the IT division, there's a lot of different companies that are in play. So there's right now, you know, there's Asus and HP all have their hands in the pie, and IBM is one of those people. And our branch in particular has had a long time history working with IBM. So tomorrow is one of the big meetings that all the significant people at NASA and all the significant people at IBM get together on one huge teleconference and
those are the worst calls. Let me give you a little piece of advice, Christian. Those are the worst calls ever.
I don't know. They're kind of enjoyable.
Oh, well, I'm glad you're liking them. But Andrew and I have been enough, and Gordon, I'm sure you've been on a few of these where you get 30 people on a conference call, and Bill, back before you're doing your own thing, you probably did these as well, right? And you get 30 people on a conference call, it's just horrific. But Christian, I'm sure you'll run the show when you're on the call.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm there to contribute. So
yeah, no, very cool.
Just doing my job.
Did you have anything to do with the current, currently it's Mission 32, it's International Space Station Mission 32, they just launched a rocket early this week, and I think yesterday, did you have anything
our space and science directorate is responsible for the IRV 3 launch that's happening this weekend.
Okay.
Over at Wallops Island, and that's the hypersonic, I'm trying to remember what exactly it is. It's hypersonic. It'll come to me eventually, but it's supposed to reach some pretty ridiculous Mach speeds, and everyone's really excited about it.
Very cool. There's also, you know, I don't know why this week, and maybe it's this month because you're at NASA, and so I've had a little, I'm not typically a NASA nerd. I know Dave McCabe is, and a lot of you guys that listen to the show are as well. They've been testing the next Mars rover drop, and they're building a larger rover this time to go to Mars. And when I go like this, it's not that big. Trust me, it's bigger than that. But it's a larger rover, and they can't do. You know, the last time they dropped that thing from the atmosphere, a couple parachutes, and then let it go, and it deployed airbags, and the thing bounced. Right, the two rovers that have been up there for a while, that thing bounced around until it came to a rest. Then the bags deflated and the thing opened up and the rover came out. Very, very, very cool. Well, the new rover's too heavy for that, and they've exceeded the weight for the bags. The airbags doesn't work, and so they've been testing some new chute designs. And so if you go out to NASA.gov, and they get some video of a test out in Arizona, where they drop this thing using a series of chutes. And, you know, you think they deploy one chute and you're fine, right? No. There's about three or four different deployments of different kinds of chutes that they use to slow that thing down as it gets into the atmosphere. And then at the very end, there's these three big, gigantic chutes that don't even open up all the way all at once because the the pressure would pull the unit apart. And so it's been kind of cool to watch that. So some cool stuff going on at NASA, and cool that you get to be a part of that during the summer. When's your time up? You got to be getting pretty close here.
I got about 3 or 4 weeks up.
So 3 weeks, head back home for a couple weeks, and then school starts.
Yep.
Yeah, busy.
I feel like this is backwards. Normally when you graduate from academic institutions, you go to places like NASA, but I'm doing kind of the reverse. It's kind of
strange. How many high school students are there this year working with you?
I don't work with any of the high school students. I work with my department, but I think there's a total of 18, and of those that are rising seniors, I think there's like 3 or 4.
Okay. But they're not working on what you're working on, right?
No.
No, you're in a good spot there. Yeah, good work. Bill, what were you going to say?
I just said, you know, if you want to blow up your internship, just please hack one of your servers. Give me some UFO information. That's all I care about.
Some special images. The rover I hear is going to be high def images that's going to be sending back now instead of the 1 megapixel ones they sent back before.
Yeah.
Which would be nice.
Yeah. Well, they learned a ton with those first set of rovers, and now they had some suspension problems and one of the wheels quit, and they had some power problems and getting, you know, the solar panels would get covered with dust, and so they learned a ton and have applied those all to this new rover. So go to Mars. All right, Andrew, speaking of Mars,
really?
You've got a Are you going to Mars anytime soon, Andrew?
No, the closest I'll get to Mars is a Mars bar, I think.
That's it. What you got a couple items here. Which one do you want to cover?
Probably the most useless gadget I've ever seen, I'd have to say. I was, for all of those who live and die by the things that we read on Wikipedia, I came across a gadget the other day. It popped up in a...
I got to show this one. Keep going.
It popped up in a daily sale site. You can now buy a little gadget called a Wiki Reader, or the Wiki Reader, which costs about $39.95, and it does real-time lookups of Wikipedia without having a subscription internet service. So
you can get all the glory and accurateness of Wikipedia without, that's hilarious. $40, huh? Wikipedia
about 40
in your
bucks.
Pocket?
Yeah, and it looks pretty close. I think it uses the same 3G service as, say, the Kindle 3G.
Yeah, it kind of has that similar look and feel to it, doesn't it?
Yeah. But I thought, you know, for someone who's got everything, that would be the perfect gift, because then they'd have access to data on everything as well.
That is hilarious. Christian, I'm getting you that for Christmas. Going to be your Christmas gift this year. $40, a wiki reader. That's funny.
Yep, that's gold, isn't it?
That is. Speaking of gold, one Marissa Meyer has made her way over to Yahoo this week, an ex-Googler, employee number 20, and a company that's kind of fallen off. Yahoo once was one of the premier internet companies or search companies in the Silicon Valley, and actually have some friends both from Nebraska here and from California that have worked for Yahoo. I wanted to ask you guys, just kind of as we close stuff up here this evening, what who gives Yahoo a chance with Marissa behind the wheel there? She's smart, she's savvy, she's been in the Valley for 15 years. She knows the ins and outs of Google as well as she's an engineer, a graduate of Stanford. Who you guys give Yahoo a chance? Are they gonna?
Yahoo do again?
Well, that's my point.
I mean, from what I know from Marissa, she was the last thing she did at Google was she was in charge of the Google.com page and keeping it clean, keeping it up to date, making it a statement of the company. So I don't know. I think it's she's a good candidate for it, and it'd be really interesting to see what she does.
Yeah, and certainly Yahoo is not search, right? They use Google as their search.
Yep.
engine for that. But they do, they have the number one email customer base. They have, I think in the top 10 daily, they've got two or three of their sites that show up in the top 10 internet sites visited. They have some traffic. They just have not been able to monetize that in some way. And, oh, yeah, and Tim mentions, Tim and chat mentions Flickr. I mean, which is, I found this funny, there's a site that came out this week called DearMarissaMeyer.com. And on the page was this sentence, please fix Flickr, or please bring Flickr back, or, you know, something along those lines. Thank you.
That would have been written by Thomas Hawk, wouldn't it?
Might be. You know, Gordon, you sent, or you posted your pictures on Flickr that you posted to the... to the blog. Are you still using Flickr? Are you using that regularly? Is that doesn't feel like Flickr's been updated in 100 years.
Yeah, they've done. So when I initially started my blog, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, and set it up and stuff, I was looking at photo hosting services because I wasn't didn't want to pay to host all those photos on my site. So I thought I'd go someplace and share them. Google Plus wasn't out there yet. Picasa was, I think, just getting off the ground and stuff, and Flickr was in its prime back then. And other than posting my photos out there for blog posts, I do look at some of the groups like the Lifehacker Workspace to see what other people's computer setups are at home and stuff like that. But other than that, I really don't touch it.
Okay. Bill, you said sports writers are pretty good out there?
Yeah, no, for Yahoo anyway. They're actually... Yeah. You know, they have a pretty good following for, you know, they break a lot of news. Even last year, they broke quite a few stories. Very good in college and pro football-wise.
Their fantasy leagues are fantastic,
yes,
from what I understand.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So they've got some things they're doing right. I mean, there are some properties that are working well. You know, as a side note, they moved their accounting division from Santa Clara out here to Omaha. And so we had some folks that I know that moved in that work for Yahoo here in Omaha, Nebraska, and they have an accounting group that's out here. So we have a if you go out west, there's a Yahoo facility out there, which is kind of cool to have in town. But they do some stuff well. I think they're going to need to. I think they suffer from what Google was suffering from just 3 years ago, which is too many properties and not enough synergy. And while that front page that I view every single day to go out and get my email, in fact, a couple times a day, never really draws me in, there's almost too many things out there, right? They never really had the intestinal fortitude to start hacking some things and get rid of some stuff and then maybe update. I don't think that front page has been redesigned in 100 years at Yahoo. I think it looks exactly the same. Now, they've been through 5 CEOs in a year, so that probably says something. But number one in email. And although they did have they leaked 465,000, we talked about this last week, 465,000 email addresses from their Google Voice, that would be the first thing to be gone. Marissa, I would cut Voice first. You know, there's you're not doing anything with Voice. Get rid of it and get your PR nightmare, you know, covered up and say, well, we've closed that division and we'll call it good. Anyways, gloom and doom, or did anybody give it a chance?
I still want to know what they do. Something like Google, isn't it?
Yeah.
I give them a chance. I mean, yeah. When you had said that you go to their Yahoo Mail site a couple times a day, I can remember when I was in a brokerage firm, and I'd go out if I didn't use the internal system just to go look at quotes and stuff of stocks, and the person, my lead within our brokerage group, like Yahoo Finance a lot, but there was way too much stuff on there, way too much other stuff going on. It was hard to find stuff, so I'd always go to Google Finance to just look quotes up quick or news that was going on about them. But I see that what Google Finance is now and what Yahoo Finance is getting cleaned up. Let's get rid of all the extra stuff, like you said, and let's get it down to just what's there, and let's really focus on the advertising and monetizing and make what is there count.
Yeah, yeah, I don't disagree. They should hire Christian Johnson, and he'll straighten them all up, give them a new look on the front page and make them more efficient behind the scenes, as well as a CDN. What does that stand for again, Christian?
Content Delivery Network.
There we go. He'll build a content delivery network that would be second to none. Christian, again, thanks for the work on the AverageGuy.tv that you did, getting continuing to get good reviews. I did mention an email. I wanted to bring this up again from last week. We talked a little bit about the Pogo plug, and Bob sent me an email that he said it was okay to read online. And so because Rennie's out in chat, it has to do with Rennie. I'll read it real quick. So he said, Jim has always enjoyed the show. Listen to 80 tonight. A couple of comments. One, Rennie needs to be let me say that again. Rennie needs to befriend someone who's getting the NBN within range of a Wi-Fi cantina. So I have no idea what that means. Andrew, can you translate that? NBN within range of a Wi-Fi cantina. What does that mean?
The NBN's a white elephant. It's the government's initiative to put fiber performance speeds into every household in the country.
Okay.
The National Broadband Network.
Ah, very good, very good. And is it going well?
No.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Oops.
Yeah, can I have some thinking music?
Some Jeopardy music. He said, we talked about the Pogo plug, or I talked about the Pogo plug last week at the end of the show. He says, I bought some Pogo plugs when they were clearancing out the old models at about $22 each. Actually had a Twitter conversation as well about the Pogo plug this week, and I'd said I'd spent $30, and you can find the device you see right here. You can buy that for $25 without having to do the deal that Pogo plug's offering online, but by the time you pay shipping, it's the same price. So $30, and they send that to you for free. He said, other than HDMI, these are better than Raspberry. These are better than Raspberry Pis, which makes me believe inside these devices are little gems of boards that have some things that you can do with them. So I found that kind of interesting. That I haven't cracked this open yet because I'm kind of using it, but maybe
there's some hack.
Yeah, maybe there's some little intelligence inside of that thing, and you know, $30. So Bob. He goes on to say you can use them as Linux boxes. I use them for several nodes, including a webcam and a control for my garage door. I haven't looked at the software recently, but last year's version supported device copy like CrashPlan across the internet, no cost or additional bandwidth. So he's talking through that. So I found that part most interesting in the post, that these little Pogo plug devices have some hackability to them. Kind of reminds me back in the days, and you can't see them anymore, but I've got some of those Linksys routers that were like WRTG.
54G.
54s. I have two of those. Both version 2 that I was going to drop on eBay and sell. In fact, if anybody wants to buy
version 2s are valuable because those are the ones that you can put DD word on. The other ones you can't. They're all messed up.
Have more memory as well.
Yeah, I think they're both version 2. I am missing an antenna for both of them, but I don't think anybody would care. I'm sure you could find the antennas, that go on those. So, Bob, thanks for your email. Thanks for the heads up on that these Pogo plug devices might have some intelligence on the inside built into them. If you're interested in talking about that, maybe we should have you on the guest on the show, and you can do some geek talk on how to hack a Pogo plug device. So very cool. I have contacted Pogo plug. I wanted to get them on the show, not to talk about that because they probably don't appreciate their products being hacked, but I wanted to see if they would send one of their senior guys to talk about the development. Very cool device. If you missed it, go back to show 80. And we talked about it there. All right, guys, did I miss anything? Anything that we need to kick in before we go? And you guys, for having this many people on the show, you guys are a little quiet tonight, I got to tell you.
I guess I do have one question.
Yeah,
is NASA or HP going to buy BlackBerry, or is that still in debate?
Well, the federal government has BlackBerry, but I don't think NASA does.
So it's not required to have a BlackBerry at NASA? Watch your Are You Still There on Google, by the way.
Nah.
Okay.
I don't think
HP would buy it.
They're
not very good with telecommunication products.
If that's agency wide or center wide, that they would even do that, because no one in that branch has those.
Now wait a minute, Andrew. So HP buys RIM, right? Isn't that like same song, second verse of? And then do they open source it after they try and make a tablet? Or?
It seems to fit.
Say, it'd be kind of like buying Palm, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
you'd be guaranteed of an outcome.
that would be interesting to see what they do. RIM's in trouble. And the federal government single-handedly, the U.S. federal government single-handedly is keeping them afloat by requiring that all federal employees have BlackBerry devices. But I don't know how much longer that's going to last. And so we could see the end of, I don't know, the end of BlackBerry. I'm sure they can hold on for another 3 or 4 years. But
I don't know, that the whole BYOD movement is rolling pretty fast through enterprise, and I'm sure companies are coming up with contingency plans in case RIM just shuts down. And
yeah, yeah.
Be interesting.
Well, and it's getting better on the phones. Anybody buy the Nexus 7? I know PC Doc or Mike Fauché has bought one. He bought the 16 gig 249. Anybody buy the Nexus 7 yet? Andrew, is that available for you guys?
Yeah, it's available. It's $299, I think.
Okay.
It's good value for a tablet, I think. I'm waiting for my touchpad running Cyanogen mod to die first, and then I'll probably pick one up.
Yeah.
I'm guessing I'll get one for work pretty soon.
You'll buy it or work will buy it?
Work will buy it.
Oh, nice.
Perks of being a mobility analyst.
I don't have a burning desire to have a 7-inch tablet. I've got a 4-inch screen on my 4.3-inch screen on my Galaxy S2, which Sprint, when you freaking hurry up and upgrade that to ICS so I can stop complaining about
it. They said they were going to.
Listen, I started today, every day on Twitter, it's going to be the ICS watch. And, you know, tomorrow will be day 8, and I copy Sprint Care, nice, you know, a little at Sprint Care, and everyone I tweet, they actually did get back to me and told me to be patient. But that's,
well, it's not something that's coming. Sprint's not going to push it through Samsung Key's desktop or Windows application, are they? They're going to push it OTA?
No, it is definitely over the air.
Okay.
Yeah, it's coming. And I did get a tweet. Let's see, who is that from? Another listener tweeted me. You guys are doing a great job, by the way, of just talking to me during the week. So Shep33 in Twitter sent me a note I think Tuesday of this week on Twitter and said, hey, I got it, so it is happening. So there is a, you know, verified upgrade in the wild for the Galaxy S2, and I thought, oh, great, it's coming. And I keep clicking that upgrade button.
Sounds like you got to calm and throw your weight around a little bit. I got a podcast. I got people that follow me. We got to get this thing going.
I've got groupies, man.
You'd think I'd have something, and the Sprint Care guys just kind of blew me off. They were like, it's coming. Just be patient. I don't really. Bill, say it again.
I'm sorry. Yeah, same problem here at work. We have two Galaxy X's on Sprint, and same issue.
Yeah. Now, I'm not that, I'm making a bigger deal out of it than I should, because I don't really care. I mean, there's not that much an ice cream sandwich that I'm going to get that I'm really going to, but it's just the principle. You know, it's like, roll the damn thing out to my phone, would you? So, it's just a matter of principle. I've been a Sprint customer I've been a Sprint customer for maybe 15 years. And I should have dropped them a long time ago, but we just were hooked into the system, and they are they are the cheapest of the three. And
yeah, so something I thought was interesting. I'm on T-Mobile, and when I was pinging them about it and things, T-Mobile was telling me that it's actually Samsung that controls when it's released. And then when I talked to Samsung, Samsung said that yes, they were the ones that actually did allow it to get pushed out. So it sounds a lot like it's maybe Samsung, if that information that they gave me is correct, versus Sprint that's actually holding back.
Well, I'm going to start tagging Samsung on there too and just start thrashing them. So day 7 of the upgrade, the ice cream sandwich upgrade watch is complete. Watch for my tweet for day 8, and I'm sorry I'm spamming you. I'm sure you hate those things, but I am going to send them out because I want them to freaking update my phone. So hopefully that will come, and hopefully by 82 I'll have an updated phone and I can stop squawking about this. Andrew, Bill, Christian, Gordon, thanks for taking the time tonight away from your busy schedules to podcast with me tonight. Andrew, you're closer to the weekend, and so have a great weekend as you start yours here fairly quickly, and appreciate you guys coming out tonight.
Cool. Yeah, thanks, Jim. Have a good one, guys.
Thank you.
I'll remind folks that if they want to contact the show, podcast at theaverageguy.tv, again on Twitter, just at Jay Collison, or follow the show whenever we make updates to what we're doing for the show, and especially when we're changing times, just the Average Guy TV. Seriously, get out to Facebook and join the group, and there's a lot of good conversations going on out there. You guys do a nice job of kind of not posting, but not over-posting out there, but some really good conversations going on the Average Guy TV Facebook group.
Over-posting, Jim? What are you talking about? You can never over-post.
Well, you're probably right. You're probably right. And
I'm glad we don't have a forum then.
And then, let's see.
Deleting posts.
I lost my train of thought. All right. And then I'll remind you, if you're ever out at theaverageguy.tv and you see an ad, just click on it. I mean, a few cents helps pay the bills. All right. We got that out of the way. Guys, have a good night, and thanks for listening. Guys out in chat, thanks for coming out. Good night, everybody.
See you, folks.
Right. Okay.
What, Jay?
Happy days.
Excuse me. I am going to have to strip the audio off the YouTube.
Oops.
Did you forget to record again?
I did.
And beep.
You're going to have to make a checklist at the top of every single one of the show notes.
You know, that's...
recording on. Did I do...
I brought it up, and I have it there, and I hit play, and then I keep the Google screen in front of it so that I can, so I can know when because I always miss that, are you still there? And then it cuts off the podcast and stuff. And so I brought that up tonight, and I must have gotten distracted, but it's okay. It's easy. Christian gave me a little tool that strips the audio off off of it anyways, and that should be
fine. Such a noob, Collison.
I am a noob.
What a noob.
I know. So it's what I know. I'm switching over in the next couple weeks. I'm switching over to a dedicated monitor just for the broadcast server, so I don't have to do that crap anymore. So pretty soon, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, I have 5 monitors on my desk now. This is dumb.
Getting expensive.
It's just dumb.
I'm going to turn into the Twit network.
Trying to. Trying to.
You're just nicer.
Yeah. Well, Leo's pretty nice.